You are listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. The NASL Nightcap with Theo Gauthier on the Sports Podcasting Network.
A note to our listeners. You may have found us this week thinking this was an Ours is the Fury podcast. Worry not, Kendra Shannon will be on as our guest later talking about the Fury. But we hope you enjoy the NASL Nightcap and subscribe to the Sports Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the Ours is the Fury gang for hosting the show on their webpage this week. A few months ago, I had the pleasure of being invited to one of my friend's teenager's hockey games. The game was part of a regional tournament outside of the usual league structure. Although the boy played well, his team lost. When he emerged from the dressing room with his hockey bag, we complimented him on his solid play in the loss. His response? It's a stupid tournament anyway. Who cares? Teenagers, right? I was brought right back into that moment last week by the reaction from LA Galaxy and DC United after their losses to Mexican teams Santos Laguna and Querétaro in the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. Both reactions were tweets from the respective team's official account. The LA Galaxy, in the midst of their 4-0 drubbing, tweeted out the smiley, shrugging, hands-up meme as if to disingenuously say, "Oh well." It was a slight that London's Guardian newspaper characterized as trolling their own fans. DC United, for their part, had this zinger. "Welp, preseason is officially over." In both cases, salty language from their supporters ensued. Those two comments hit a nerve. Those are two of America's representatives in the region's top club competition reacting like moody teenagers who can't cope with having been bested by superior opponents. It represents a view in some circles that the competition isn't anything to get too worked up about. It's almost like last year never happened, where Canada's representative, an MLS club that had earned its place by rising above the other contenders from MLS and NASL, went on a run to the final. What the Impact did was magical, and like any tournament run, was full of twists and turns, good luck and bad, and moments of transcendence like Cable Porter's extra time goal at home against Pachuca. Was there no lesson in here for MLS clubs? The takeaway seemed to be, take the competition seriously, and your fans and broadcast partners will as well. Over 60,000 fans packed Olympic Stadium in Montreal for the final against Club America, and the city was enraptured with the team. The rewards were great. The city fell back in love with the Impact, and the media made stars of Laurent Simon and Ignacio Piatti. Also, do you think Didier Drogba gets signed without that spring run into the Champions League final? Yet there continues to be this feeling amongst American MLS teams that the competition is somehow beneath them. Is the competition perfect? Of course not. The timing, spread over two calendar years, leads to confusion. The most difficult part of the tournament takes place when Central American teams are in mid-season. For Canadian and U.S. teams, this is preseason. Players don't have match fitness. The television availability is minimal. The teams can at times be obscure. The prize money probably doesn't even cover travel expenses. But you can't snap your fingers and have a prestigious tournament appear out of thin air. Teams have to buy in, go for it, and give it the credibility they want the tournament to have. Taking the tournament seriously, playing your best players, that's the chicken and the egg. This is why the NASL will want a US Open Cup or Voyageurs Cup victory as soon as possible. That's the only path to the Champions League currently open to the league. You can bet one thing. NASL teams will take a berth in the tournament as a privilege and will give it priority number one. The Impact, yeah, them again, participated in the 2008 Champions League while they were still in the American Second Division. Former Ottawa Fury head coach Mark Dos Santos was an assistant on that team. They treated that opportunity as the most important event in the team's history and made it to the quarterfinals against Santos Laguna and even won the home leg of that fixture in front of 55,000 fans at Olympic Stadium. Teams and athletes compete with a constant eye to the next level of competition. It's human nature. Whether it's a dynasty they face in their own league or the desire to pit yourself against better players, or earning a spot in a continental competition by showing you were amongst the elite in your own sandbox, teams are out to prove themselves. USL teams want nothing more than to beat NASL teams. NASL teams want nothing more than to beat MLS teams. And MLS teams seem to shun the opportunity to go head-to-head against CONCACAF's best. What gives? NASL fans would make Champions League nights magical. NASL players would give it their all. Hopefully, it's something that's just over the horizon. We'll be right back. NASL News! Kevin Laramie, our producer, joins us again this week for the news segment. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Theo. What a big week of news for Canadian team as well.
Yeah. In Ottawa, we had a big signing. Marcel DeYoung, who's a Canadian international, he was playing for Sporting KC. He signed on with the Fury. So they're going to have two starting Canadian players, Canadian international players, when you add Julian de Guzman, the captain, and Marcel DeYoung, the left back or midfielder. It depends where Paul Dalglish decides to deploy him. But that's a big signing and a big boost in positivity for the capital of Canada, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. And with the departure of Mark Dos Santos, we thought that the Brazilian file would have been closed with this contact in Brazil. Apparently not, because they signed a Brazilian as well.
That's right. Pablo Diego, who is a winger. His last club was Fluminense. He was playing for Fluminense when he signed.
Pretty high-level club in Brazil.
Pretty high club. Yeah, it's the top league, in the top league, and he's a winger. So the Fury are going to ostensibly have two wingers that are Brazilian, one Paulo Jr. on the left and Pablo Diego on the right. And the only caveat that I'll put to that is that after their most recent preseason match against Real Salt Lake Academy, he flew not back to Ottawa, but back to Brazil to nurse a hamstring injury. So that wasn't a great start for, although he did score a couple of goals, I think, in preseason so far. He had to go back to Brazil.
And now if we move to our favorite off-season topic of the preseason so far, Rayo OKC, with a big announcement this Thursday, a big name that is known to everyone if they watched the World Cup over the last couple of years, and if they watched the Champions League over the last couple of years as well.
That's right. Giorgio Samaras, who is a former Celtic player, as you mentioned, a Champions League experience. He's also a Greek international, has played in World Cups and European Championships. It's a rumor so far, but the club have announced that, like you said, Thursday they're going to unveil a world-class player, as they're saying. And there were a few tweets from sources who have been right in the past about Rayo OKC signings that it was Giorgio Samaras. It's another big name, another World Cup player for Rayo OKC.
31 years old, Dale. Yeah. That's what's surprising is that he's still young. He could have probably been a DP in Major League Soccer, but he probably chose NASL, allegedly. We'll see what happens on Thursday, but that could be a great signing for OKC, but for maybe the league as well.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is a goal-scoring machine. He has 111 career goals. That's in about 400 appearances for club and country. He knows how to score goals, and it's something that the Rayo OKC, what do we call them, the Lightning? I don't know.
The Bolts. Sure, Bolts.
They were looking for depth at that position, definitely, but he's more than depth. He's going to be a starter for Rayo OKC at striker. Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
I was going to say there's a couple of big preseason intercontinental trips. We've seen images of the rowdies in England in Nottingham Forest over the last couple of days. Fort Lauderdale are in China, and FC Edmonton are in Scotland, probably with Colin Miller's contact in Scotland. But very interesting preseason for those three clubs in the NASL.
Yeah, China has been all over the soccer news this winter with all the signings that they've made. Big signings for a lot of money. They were the country that spent the most money on transfers during the January transfer window. And now they continue to make news as Fort Lauderdale went over there. And I believe I saw that their first match they won 4-0 against the Chinese opposition. I didn't have time or the interest really to check what level of play that Chinese team plays at. But
I like the fact that you mentioned interest.
Yeah.
We have to keep a certain level of sanity here. So
yeah, we might have to change that viewpoint soon, but because of all the signings they're making, sure. But we'll see. Yeah, and like you said, Nottingham Forest, the old Brian Clough team in England, is hosting Tampa Bay Rowdies. A big trip for them. And FC Edmonton in Scotland, like you said, Colin Miller's contacts. The one thing that I'm seeing is the fans of those teams on Twitter seem to be enjoying this. I've only seen positive things being said. And why wouldn't you? Other than maybe the fatigue factor, I don't know, maybe.
You know what it does? It gives fans of, example, Edmonton, Tampa Bay, or Fort Lauderdale, a certain other team. Now the fact that Edmonton is practicing with a Scottish Premier League club, it gives them interest into the Scottish Premier League. Same thing for Tampa Bay. Now the Tampa Bay fan will adopt Nottingham Forest as their second or third team because the Tampa Bay practice at their facility. So it's kind of interesting in that point of view.
Yeah, it's a win-win for everyone involved, and that's a good thing to do. Moving on, we might finally see some progress on New York Cosmos and their stadium proposal. Empire of Soccer is reporting that a vote by the development board over there could come very soon. So that would be huge news because I've been out there, Kevin, to Hempstead, New York,
to their stadium.
Hofstra, yeah. Oof. And although it's a nice little stadium, it's the location that really is a turnoff for most people.
Well, Belmont.
Yeah, it's not the Coney Island Stadium. Played a few times at Coney Island last year.
Yeah.
At the baseball stadium there.
That's the image I had in my head of watching them play with the Ferris wheel in the background.
Yeah, and because the Fury were also the ones who played at Coney Island against them.
That is exactly why I have that image in my head.
So there you go. But their home team, their home stadium is miles and miles and miles into Long Island. This Belmont location is much closer to Manhattan. A lot better availability, accessibility with public transit. I know that last year for the final when we were there, a lot of people could get a bus to the Belmont site and then have to sort of switch over to another bus or whatnot. So that's a lot closer. It almost feels like a Red Bull situation with Harrison where access is pretty good to get to that stadium.
Yeah, Belmont is known for the race, the horse racing. It's a town that's known for the Belmont Stakes, but the facilities are there and transportation because of the Belmont Stakes and other venues in that area. The facilities, infrastructures for transport, public transport is there to be able to get more people in a bigger stadium that they would have in Hofstra.
Yeah, and the Cosmos proposal is the most ambitious one. There are four of them. The other three are just plain retail propositions to put at that site. But the Cosmos one involves the stadium. It involves all kinds of other spaces to combine there to make it a destination for more than just soccer. So, we're hoping for sure that it's the soccer stadium that gets the go-ahead to go there and to see the Cosmos have a stadium in tune with the prestige of the name, if you will.
Yes, to bring back the glory to the name and not just playing in a makeshift, quote-unquote, type of stadium.
Yeah, definitely. And Empire of Soccer was on fire this week. Today they announced, they reported that Minnesota United, to continue on that story about the naming of Minnesota United in MLS, they have trademarked Minnesota FC and MNFC. So it looks like the ship has sailed on Minnesota United.
But it makes sense because if you just call it Minnesota FC and the nickname Loons, you keep the iconography of a loon, the wing, and type of thing. So their nickname will be the loon. The name people will call them and use in conversation will be the loon. But like a Toronto FC or other club in the world, Minnesota FC will be the name used on paper. But in conversation, it'll be the loons.
Yeah, definitely. That's the positive way to look at that for sure. And all the power to them now as they move on to MLS, most likely in one season, in 1 year. And finally, tonight we have news that there's a new player in the Indianapolis market, not a soccer player on the field, but outside the field. Yeah, in the boardroom. There's a gentleman who wants to build a soccer stadium next to the airport and make it specifically for MLS. He's not making any bones about that. That's what he wants. He is not part of the Indy 11 setup in any way, and that's just another example of teams, markets that are competing for leverage and for standing in their own markets.
You know what I'm starting to think, Theo? It's getting quite crowded in the cities that want an MLS team. It's getting more than 24 now. So you know what? There's going to be a couple of them that are disappointed because they're not all getting one.
Yeah, definitely. Remember, we had, I think on our second episode, Keaton Robbins talking about all the different markets that are available. But the trend seems to be these very deep-pocketed owners who want to get their way right into MLS from the get-go, like Arthur Blank, for example, and pay the $100 million and just have it done with. So that's an interesting dynamic that's developing. Like you said, there's a ton of markets, and there's going to be definitely a cap on the amount of teams you can have in MLS. That might be good for NASL because, well, maybe not in the Indianapolis situation because they're not going to put two NASL teams in Indianapolis. But it might sway some owners to just go, MLS, we can't have a team there, so we'll go to NASL.
Yep, it's going to be a story very interesting to be here to follow.
Excellent. So that's the news for this week. Thank you, Kevin. And we will be right back. Kendra Shannon covers the Ottawa Fury for Northern Starting 11 and also appears on a Fury-centric podcast called, appropriately enough, Ours is the Fury. She joins us tonight from Gatineau, Quebec.
Hello.
Kendra, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great. Great
awesome.
To be here.
So I think the question I most frequently got from elsewhere in the league this offseason regarding the Fury is, what in the world happened?
Hmm. That's a very good question. I think there's a few combinations of things that happened with the Fury at the end of the season. Obviously, we finished really well and, you know, went to the final, played New York Cosmos, unfortunately lost. But then we also had the new coach coming in. And of course, any new manager is going to want to get players that he already knows or knows the system that he plays and things like that. So I think for myself, I was prepared for some movement that was natural of the players. But I think that because the Fury finished so strongly and did so well, the players, I think their value went up a little bit more than what their current contracts were. And that paired with a very strong U.S. dollar and a very weak Canadian dollar probably pulled more players away than we would have hoped. And so I think, yeah.
Well, let's look at it. Let's go step by step and see where it all went. I'm going to say went wrong, but where it ended up.
Yes, where it ended up. That's a good journey
the Fury fans took. So the major announcement early in the offseason was that Paul Dalglish would be the new manager. So maybe you can take us through that.
So yes, we were given this news. This was actually before the season ended, which I was really surprised about. Well, no, I guess it was known that Mark would be leaving before the season ended.
Right.
And that was a huge surprise to, I think, everybody. and then Paul Dalglish was announced. And a lot of people know him because of his dad, Kenny Dalglish. But that was not the case for me because I didn't really follow Liverpool. I was kind of new to the Premier League in the last, you know, decade or so. Right. And so I didn't really know that his background at all. So I honestly didn't know anything about him when he was announced. So.
Yeah, and for our listeners, it's Kenny Dalglish is a legendary Liverpool player and coach. He won tons of championships when Liverpool were a dynasty in England, and his son is Paul, and it sort of goes hand in hand. As soon as you mention Paul Dalglish, one of the first questions that comes through is, oh, is that Kenny's boy?
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And isn't there another Liverpool link on the Fury coaching staff?
Oh, yes, of course. Bruce Grobelaar, our goalkeeping coach, played for Liverpool as well. Does John Pugh have? No. John Pugh was never hooked to Liverpool, was he?
Yeah, no, I don't think so, no. So Dalglish is announced as the new manager. What was the reaction from the Fury faithful?
Well, for me, it was kind of, I didn't really know who he was. So I was kind of like, where's this guy coming from? I think that a lot of, some people that I know were quite hopeful because they had known, kind of his dynasty, or not his dynasty, but like his, pedigree, I suppose we could say.
Right, right.
But it was kind of more like, where what's this guy doing? Because he kind of came in, and unfortunately for him, he kind of has really big shoes to fill. Like, everyone loves Mark Dos Santos. Everyone, you know, he was very endeared into the community at Ottawa Fury FC.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Paul kind of stepped in, and we didn't really know what to make of him because he's not anything like Mark personally. Okay. From what I've seen.
Okay. In what way?
Well, he's very blunt, and he says exactly what's on his mind, and sometimes it doesn't come across the same way Mark would come across as in his interviews or things like that. And so
okay.
He's in a difficult position because we did finish so strongly last year in that mm-hmm. We went to the final and finished second. So where does he really take the team? Like, what can he promise us? So he kind of stepped in and said, hey, second isn't good enough sort of thing. And I'm going to be first next year and things like that. And so
okay, yeah,
we're kind of taken aback, like, but we just had this great season. So it was kind of I felt it was a bit of a rocky transition.
Okay, yeah. Well, what didn't help was that he comes into the job and the departures start, like there's an exodus, basically. Maybe yes. You can tell us some of the big names that have left the Fury this offseason.
Oh, who hasn't left? Well, some of the players, you kind of could see it coming. I think there was some movement that I wasn't surprised about. We had Drew Becky, who wasn't really getting that many minutes. Ali Hassan, who wasn't getting many minutes. A few surprises for me were Richie Ryan, our captain.
Right, yeah.
You always think like, well, hopefully he'll have this, you know, loyalty to the team. But I think maybe NASL is kind of in a weird position in North American soccer for that kind of thing to happen, really. We lost Nisha Ubi-Peripovic from the midfield. We lost Ryan Richter, a defender. We lost Tommy Heinemann, our striker.
Yeah. Those are the big names, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was a few things like Nicky Patterson left. He was going through some injury troubles. So to be honest, I didn't really see him staying. Two that I was really disappointed in was Colin Falvey, because there was apparently some clause in his contract that if he, you know, didn't say something by midnight of some day that, you know, he would be with the Fury, and that time passed. And then it was announced that he also had requested a transfer. So that kind of really disappointed me. And
yeah, I could see why. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And wasn't it like, Indianapolis seemed to step up and take, was it four players from the Fury roster?
Falvey, Ubi, and there was one
Patterson.
Other. Oh, yes, yeah. Those are the ones that I come to mind at the moment, but right. Yeah, so.
Yeah, they certainly looked at the model and went, they seem to be know what they're doing. Let's go get them.
Exactly.
We had the president of Indy 11, Peter Wilt, a couple of weeks ago on the show, and he apologized to me, as he knows I'm a Fury fan, for taking all the players. But
nice.
Yeah, it was kind of nice, but it doesn't make me feel
time.
Better. Yeah. Okay, so those are the departures, but when departures happen, the excitement of signings takes place. So maybe you can take us through that.
Well, we have a lot of new signings. I think I'll just kind of comment on the ones that I'm most excited to see.
Sure, yeah.
Obviously, Marcel De Jong, pronunciation. Mm-hmm. Canadian national team player. He was with Sporting KC last year. I think he did really well. He's been performing really well. I've heard that he kind of positioned himself to come into the Fury, so that kind of shows that he wants to be here, and that's really exciting to me. I'm very happy to see that, and him and Julian de Guzman obviously will be a good force, and also Kyle Porter, who
has Silverbacks been... last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, I'm really excited for this new forward, Dennis Chin. He, in preseason, he's been doing quite a bit of damage.
Okay.
I was reading some of the notes from the last game that they played against the Real Salt Lake youth team or academy. And he and Carl Haworth seemed to link up quite well, and they assisted on each other's goals, and he seems to be quite a dynamic player, so that sounds that's really good. And he's super fast too. So
right, oh, that's always exciting.
Yeah.
So maybe without giving us your season prediction, we'll do that later. But what are you looking forward to in terms of maybe one big hope that you have for this season?
Okay, so you asked me about hopes and fears, and they kind of go together. So
right,
I kind
yeah.
of wanted to. Talk about both of those together. Okay, so we've been promised attacking football, which is really exciting. However, sometimes that doesn't work very well. So I have kind of a hope fear about that.
yeah, understandable.
So it will be exciting to see more attacking style and hopefully more goals and forwards and getting stronger in the front. But also hoping that it really doesn't fall apart in the defense. And people who know me know that I love midfields, a strong midfield and lots of passing and not really exciting football, to be honest. But hopefully, in that whole attacking football, we keep, you know, the strength of the mids and the defenders as well. So that's kind of a hope fear. Another hope fear is the Amway Cup for me. I really hope that they take it very seriously. I think the players that were here last year kind of understood what the Amway Cup meant. And I hope that the players that are coming in also understand what that means for, the Champions League and CONCACAF Champions League and what that means for the Fury. So my hope is that the team and the coach, the organization takes it very seriously. The fear that I have is that maybe some of the new players won't really understand what it, you know, that what that's about, and that it won't be taken as seriously. So
yeah, hopefully. And to that, I mean, the NASL has a great in to the Champions League if one of the Canadian teams would do it, because it might be a little easier than the U.S. Open Cup in that you have to win three consecutive home and away series and you're in. You've won the Voyageurs Cup or the Amway Cup, and that means that you have a berth into the Champions League. So that I completely agree with you there that's something that Edmonton and Ottawa need to shoot for and throw everything they have at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what's your season prediction? Let's just jump to that. What what do you think is going to happen this year if you were to project that?
Ooh, this one was a hard one for me because I'm very, very optimistic about things generally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the Ars is the Fury podcast, I'm always the, hey guys, wait, you know, things aren't so bad.
That's needed on most podcasts.
So I think the spring season, though, because of all of the new players and kind of a new style that Paul has, I feel that it might be mediocre, and I think maybe seventh could possibly be the best that we could hope for there. And I think the fall will pick up as of course people, you know, kind of buy into everything, and maybe fourth is a bit too hopeful, but maybe fifth, and realistically probably overall maybe sixth. I don't know how you feel about that, but
I think that's fair. Yeah,
optimistically fifth overall, but
okay so, but not a playoff team by any stretch.
I hope so, but
right.
I'm really tentative with that, with the playoff, the whole playoff, talk. Yep. At the moment.
Okay. Sounds good. There's something that we haven't discussed together that I wanted to ask you about. You recently traveled to Spain and went to see one of your European teams you cheer for, Rayo Vallecano, which is also, as it so happens, the Rayo OKC's parent club.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to. Sure. We actually ended up going to two La Liga games, actually, in one day, it turned out. We saw Rayo Vallecano play Sevilla, and it was a 2-2 tie. And it was one of those things where I've been watching this team for a while. And, of course, you know, wake up at weird times and, you know, you have to stream something from somewhere, and just actually being physically in the stadium was really a huge treat for me. And, you know, being, you know, shouting distance from the Bucaneros, who are their supporters group, was like, it was such a great feeling. And then, you know, they came out for practice and I was like, oh, they're right there. So it was a huge treat for me. And I ended up sitting very close to the pitch. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was just, and of course, a 2-2 tie against the fifth place team in the league was the best you could hope for in that situation.
No kidding. Yeah, that's great. And didn't I also see a tweet from you that you caught practice while you were having your coffee?
Yeah, they have open practices, which I know the Fury does as well, but you just kind of like walked in and, you know, ordered a coffee and watched them practice. So it was, that also was a really cool thing to see.
That is cool. That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so before we wrap, I'd just like to ask you the question that I ask every one of my guests. It's the crystal ball question, and I'm going to ask you what you believe the soccer landscape in North America will look like in 10 years. The canvas is all yours.
Okay. Well, at first I read the question as the NASL landscape in the next 10 years. So, but I'm thinking that, like, obviously soccer is a growing sport in North America, and hopefully by, you know, in the next 10 years, the Canadian League will have, you know, gotten started and have grown. And that's something that I'm really hoping for and really looking forward to. So hopefully I'll be, you know, fully in into the Canadian League. But I think that I can see NASL getting much stronger. It's considered like a quote unquote second division, but I feel like since there's no ties with the MLS, they can kind of do whatever they want, almost, you know?
Right. They can be as strong as they want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I can see it becoming stronger than a second division, but not like maybe more of like a 0.5, quote unquote, you know, like something stronger than a second division. But I really like the approach that the NASL has. There are realistic expansion goals, and things seem to be a little bit more organic. I know that MLS has this crazy vision of, you know, lots of teams by in the next few years. But for me, that it seems a little bit, I don't know, like it's a big spectacle, and which is great, and it draws in a lot of fans, but I prefer the approach of the NASL, where kind of things happen organically, and fans are allowed a space to you know, create their traditions and things like that. So I kind of like the way NASL is approaching soccer in North America. I also see the NASL, or sorry, not the NASL, the MLS. I do see the MLS growing, and we'll see how big they get and how sustainable that is over the years. But I do feel like the NASL will have more exposure, more TV deals, and get much stronger than it is now. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And Kendra, thanks for being on the NASL Nightcap tonight.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Her name is Kendra Shannon, and you can catch her on Twitter. She's at Crooked Beat. And you can catch her her Ottawa Fury musings on Northern Starting 11, as well as hearing more from her by subscribing to the Ours is the Fury podcast. We'll be right back. That's our show this week. Thank you for listening to us, and I'd like to thank our guest, Kendra Shannon, for joining us this week to talk about the Ottawa Fury. You can catch her, like I mentioned before, on Twitter, at Crooked Beat. She's a really good follow for the Ottawa Fury, and we hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll hope to see you next week. Good night. Good night. So good night.
You were listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us, sportspodcastingnetwork.com.